Les colloques du Collège de France.
Yeah, it's my distinguished pleasure to be here and talk to you and to introduce the private international law perspective on property in outer space that will be complemented and corrected by Alex Mills afterwards and others. I want to thank, of course, Samantha Besson and the Collège de France for organizing this conference, and also the PEUPR Origine. It is for me the opportunity and the challenge to try to see how private international law can help in understanding the new space framework, how we can use private international law, the mechanisms or the private international law perspective in capturing what might property be in this tension that was already very much mentioned between the legal aspects, the philosophical aspects, political aspects of property. And for me, the core of the presentation will be about identifying, okay, what is property? How can property be conceived in the context of outer space? What does this mean for us on Earth? And with this in mind, I open a little bit here, very blurry field of property, which everyone has a little bit probably an intuitive way of understanding it, but when you really want to define it, it becomes a little bit more tricky. To start with, I found this very nice quote from Also sprach Zarathustra, which is, I think, the best way for introducing a conference here on our odyssey to new space. Keeping this in mind, I will introduce a little bit here the work on property, bearing in mind this huge tensions that historically existed, of course, over what property is. Just as in order to illustrate it, during the 19th century, of course, we have property in the context of the French Revolution, the right to dispose of goods in the most absolute manner. And then we have the socialist collectivist reaction to this, and property as theft, where we have to find, our way of defining property so as to make it acceptable for the society. This also shows from the private law perspective that property has those very strong political and cultural dimensions, and that therefore when you take the comparative law perspective and try to see, okay, what is property in the context of French law, what is property in the context of German law, English law, and then we can go to other continents, we have very different understandings of what property is, and within property, what are the legal categories we have to use. This will be relevant also in the context of property in outer space, but categories such as movable property, immovable property, will receive very different meanings and will have very different legal regimes attached to them. So this does, of course, not help in understanding property. Here, this question of property then will be prolonged by me by the idea that we have an organization on the global level where states have to develop their own domestic law. They do so, and for economic operators, when they carry out activities internationally, this means that those economic operators, they will have to make choices between those different available domestic laws, and the states are aware about the potentially international influence that their domestic regulations and rules might have. This is a quite important aspect now for me from the private law perspective, because the origin of private law is state law, but states exercise their jurisdiction, and this refers both to here prescriptive jurisdiction, so the scope of application of domestic laws, and adjudicatory jurisdiction, so jurisdiction for the courts to resolve disputes, in a way that is often that goes beyond the limits of the state in itself. So sovereignty in the public international law understanding of it does not mean that the state cannot exercise its jurisdiction extraterritorially, even though I don't like here the idea of extraterritorially, because when a state applies his own law or grants jurisdiction to his own courts over an international dispute or an international relationship, usually does so because there is a certain link with the state's territory. So there is no pure, or there's rarely a purely extraterritorial scope of application or jurisdiction of the state. Usually there is a certain nexus, a certain link that will be required. But from the private law perspective and in the French understanding of private international law, this is a very important aspect. Civil law is understood to be potentially universally applicable. So whenever there is a private relationship between two private parties anywhere in the world, French law makes it possible to resolve a potential dispute and will provide a solution that is acceptable or that is fair and just, pursuant to a French way of defining justice. And if other states adopt also such an extensive view of their jurisdiction, we see that there is, by definition, a conflict that leads to what I call here the legal competition, and that will shape, will have an important role in shaping property in outer space. Now, we continue, but here I will be quite fast because it has already been discussed very much. We have this tension between the Outer Space Treaty and the non-appropriation principle, but now the new trends in national law recognizing property rights or the possibility of property rights, which is, by some states at least, considered to be in line with the idea of the free use of outer space. Now, continuing a little bit here, the framework of the paper, we have to keep in mind that private international law, even though it is called international, remains national law. So each state will have its own private international law. And therefore, private international laws are also specific to each state. They are particular to each state. And here this creates already a little bit of tension because the purpose of private international law is to deal with situations that are international, so for which we know they go beyond the interests of one state concerned. But the solution to the legal relationship has to be found in the particular private international law system of one state, which will, by definition, or most of the times, be different from the private international law systems of the other state. So we, even when we strive towards a common understanding of private international law, when it gets to the application of private international law, it will always remain specific to each legal system, to each legal order. this then, for me, provides a series of implications. When we take this now from the global perspective, and we try to have this higher vision of how can we deal with the diversity of private international laws. From the global perspective, the plurality of national legal orders is a fact. So that is something that I just take as granted. Makes it much easier for me because I don't have to justify the content of the different national legal orders. They are there, and from the private perspective, we have to deal with the existence of those private of those national legal orders. And the coherence of the global system has to be found in the interactions between the national legal orders. So we leave it up to the private parties to get away with this diversity and find the best solutions. And then when we now try to see, okay, what is the influence of public international law in this? In the context of property, there will be significant influences. But what is really striking is that the truly international perspective is not structured in itself by public international law. Public international law is just telling all the states, okay, create your own private international law system. And then it's up to the states to try to elaborate the best private international law system conceivable, but conceivable at their level. And the overall coherence and the truly international perspective results then from this interplay between national legal systems. But there is not one sufficiently well-organized international legal order for private relationships that provides the legal regime, making it possible to resolve the disputes. And this is here a starting point that will be important. When we now continue with explaining what is my private law perspective here to the question of property on outer space, the focus on the state's policy and the specific state's policy of the state elaborating the private international law system is really crucial in understanding the perspective, because for the private operator, what counts is the way in which a relevant state recognizes its claims. How a state ensures that the rights granted to that private operator will be secured. And public international law is not creating such subjective rights for the benefit of the economic operator. And then we can start discussing a little bit investment treaties that do create rights for investors, but it's one of the questions of outer space property, but we are also stretching a little bit here the concept of property. And when we talk about property in outer space, we go beyond investors' rights protection, and we want to think about how this property can circulate from one private person to another. So what is important here is to identify whether one state does recognize property, and if this is so, if that state is economically speaking relevant, then from the private law perspective, we can talk about property. This, of course, then has to be illustrated by what already has been discussed. Now the new trend in international space law and the new space law with the Artemis Accords. Here I can be very brief because this has already very much been discussed. And based on here those tensions that exist from the private law perspective, I will defend the idea that we now see the emergence of an economically efficient legal order, or at least we see some first elements of that economically efficient legal order, where property is linked to the economic utility for the owner. And this emergence of the lex mercatoria spatialis has to be confronted with the commonality of outer space and how to try to limit property, or how to make property conditional upon the respect of certain principles, so as to make it licit from a public international law perspective or from a broader policy perspective. This question, I will very briefly here discuss it in two different ways. So the first way is that from the private law perspective, we can clearly establish that we can recognize property in outer space over celestial resources. And that this private law perspective also underlines the need to work on how to shape a common understanding of property in outer space. These are the two points that we can now continue with. First one, recognizing property in outer space over celestial resources. Here it's important to keep in mind that property rights are subjective rights granted to a private person by a state. From the private law perspective. So here we will see that property is this idea of subjective rights that can be linked to the privatization of outer space. And as a consequence, that will be in my second subpoint, we will see that property is a pluralistic concept that is rooted in national legal orders. So here, to start with, the property as subjective right linked to the privatization of outer space. It's pretty much some elements, that I have already discussed. What matters from the private law's perspective is to see whether states have the possibility to grant subjective rights to private persons and to secure the economic utility of those rights, including through enforcement mechanisms that ensure that if anyone does not respect that subjective right of the person, this will entitle this person to get economic satisfaction. We can think about a bundle of possibilities here. We have the first easy one. If you you contract over the resource that was extracted from the celestial body. And you promise that you will sell it, and then you won't sell, or you sell the product and the other person does not pay, you can get contractual remedy. What is important about property is the idea that the subjective right goes beyond just contractual partners. The subjective right is protected in relationship to other persons that we have no pre-established relationship with. But even here, it's quite easily conceivable to say, okay, if the United States recognizes a property right, and then someone in France violates, infringes this property right, the United States can grant compensation to the U.S. citizen that is the owner of that resource under U.S. law to that U.S. citizen in the U.S. That decision might only be enforceable in the U.S., but even though it's only enforceable in the U.S., you can be quite sure that it will, economically speaking, be efficient. And vice versa, if North Korea decides that there are property rights or no one should have the possibility to appropriate resources extracted from Moon, well, probably no one will care much about it. The caveat here is that here we see already an influence of public international law considerations with the idea of the free use. We see that public international law is necessary in order to ensure that if you start extracting resources from the Moon, no one will interfere with that extraction of the resources. Because here, even though you do not claim state sovereignty over the Moon, if other states tell you, okay, you can't appropriate the Moon, and therefore what you will install, I will destroy it, will make it economically completely irrelevant to start exploiting the resources of the Moon. So here we see already that somewhere public international law, at least as insofar as it prevents conflicts and makes the appropriation of resources or the extraction of resources possible, is necessary somewhere, which might explain perhaps some of the policy implications of current new space. And this has already much been discussed with the idea of how to ensure that property goes in line with the commonality, priority rights or exclusivity rights that are distributed in advance seem difficultly compatible here with what is necessary for property. Once a resource is extracted, that becomes a different question, for which I might be much biased by French law, because under French law, once a resource is extracted, it's movable property, and under French law, movable property is presumed to belong to the person just possessing it. So under French law, you possess celestial resource, and then you are presumed to be the legitimate owner of that resource. And here, when we continue, we see that international law is absolutely inadequate for commercial space operations, mainly because international law does not address private operators, and it creates only obligations for states. And as an economic operator, what I am looking for is a claim that is secured by the state and that I, as private operator, can use. And that's why here, from the private law perspective, we have to focus on this idea of subjective rights, the possibility of transferring the resources, of transferring the goods, which is also, I think, a strong justification for property. We can come back to this later on, but once you accept the idea that the property, the resource is useful when you start transferring it, when you have the transfer of the good, this often implies also some traffics, taxes, sharing of the benefits, and therefore you already have this idea of rendering the benefit beneficiary for more than only one person or the one who extracted the resources. Continuing this now is with the idea, okay, how can we then understand property from the global perspective? What is property when we try to take it now from the conceptual point of view? And here for me, it's important to understand that property, from the private law perspective, is this pluralistic concept. A pluralistic concept that can have different meanings in different legal systems, in different national legal orders. But this does not mean that there is no unitary or common understanding of property, nor that the public international will be completely irrelevant. So focusing on this pluralistic dimension, each state will have to define what is property. And I think here it's important that public international law recognizes this possibility for states to create property rights under domestic law. So it's up to each state to determine who has legitimate property rights. This will create tensions where some states will say, okay, there are legitimate property rights, where others will deny it. And then we have to see how we can cope with those difficulties. And here we also have this strong connection with the competition between legal orders, because we have here the extensive exercise of jurisdiction. So states can create property rights. They can create property rights about many things, about intangible assets. You can think about intellectual property. So even something that is completely immaterial can be secured through property rights. So a resource extracted from an asteroid is even more concrete than a new invention. So here we see this possibility as one that just exists. But then when we continue with this, we have to see, okay, how can we make those rights, those property rights created by states, economically relevant? And here we have a strong connection with sovereignty considerations, because we have to think about the enforcement of those property rights. And the enforcement relies on a link with the state, because it's the role of the state to provide enforcement mechanisms that will make the claim economically relevant to the economic operator. And here the state has a major role in providing a legal framework that enables the economy to work on a reliable basis, on predictability, and where you do not need to put maximum pressure on the other person in order to have your position or your rights secured, because you know the state will intervene and secure your legitimate expectations. And here, this is also important in justifying this necessary reference to national legal systems when we want to justify property in outer space. Property in outer space remains property under the national law of a state established on Earth. So it remains terrestrial property. And therefore, it's necessarily linked to this national dimension of law. Here we see this now with the Artemis Accords and the new trend in national laws, recognizing the possibility of property. So I could just finish here and tell you, okay, we have states that recognize property in outer space. From the private law perspective, there is property from outer space. That's it. But of course, we can also think a little bit more through it in order to see, okay, what other consequences can we derive from it? And how can we try to conceive property, or should we conceive property from a global perspective in a way that ensures that this understanding of property that we want all states to follow in their domestic legislation is in line with the commonality of outer space. So we cannot impose on states how they have to define property, but we should at least provide a conceptual framework that makes it possible for states to conceive property in line and in compatibility with the commonality of outer space. So very briefly, I will discuss now how to conceive property in a way that shapes the common understanding of property in outer space. The first one is that property can be seen in outer space over celestial resources as one of the founding elements of what I call the Lex Mercatoria Spatialis. Lex Mercatoria Spatialis, it's based on the idea that under private law, especially commercial law, There are many mechanisms that make it possible for private operators to choose the applicable or the relevant legal system under which they want to conduct their activities. London is very strong in attracting all disputes over maritime transportation. So through litigation clauses, through choice of law clauses, private operators can choose the relevant national legal system for their activities. And the same applies very much to space activities. There are some differences that I will briefly outline, but here we see that this possibility for commercial operators to choose the relevant national legal system creates also a regulatory competition between states in order to attract investment, in order to attract economic activities. I will develop this a little bit later on, but here the Lex Mercatoria, which was the law of the merchants, developed mainly under contractual considerations, can provide a useful parallel for what is happening now in new space and the commercialization of new space, even though there are differences because the Lex Mercatoria Spatialis is not spontaneous law and it's not primarily contractual law. It is based on the idea that some states, want to foster that competition and they want to make it possible for private operators to opt for their national legal system in order to conduct their activities. But for the private operator, it doesn't change that much. Because when you want now to carry out space activities, well, you can choose whether you go under the law of Luxembourg or whether you go of the law of the US. China will be less available, but you have to make the choice. Under which law will you establish your activities in order to carry them out? And here we see that the Lex Mercatoria Spatialis, it's this idea that competition is accepted, is fostered by some states, and that is already sufficient for attracting investment within the network of those states that make it possible. Here again, the Artemis Accords are, of course, also there for the US in order to create this network of states that share this idea of competition and regulatory competition in order to develop new space activities. So this is very much what I already said. What is left now is a question of how to incorporate the commonality of outer space in this. And I think one first element is already to accept that we have to ensure that the international legal framework makes this competition between legal systems possible, and that the competition between legal systems is not as such something that would be bad or that would have to be reduced, because a competition in itself can provide already very interesting incentives and has strong justifications. We have, of course, a justification of freedom of enterprise, freedom here to conduct business activities. We also have the freedom to innovate. Perhaps you also have the freedom to pioneer. And all those elements, they go in favor of making competition possible. This does not mean that having a common understanding of property would be useless. On the contrary, having a common understanding of property that is not exhaustive, that it does not provide a clear regime for all aspects, but that says as long as your national system complies with some guidelines, guiding principles as to what property should be on the international level, this would be helpful in making it possible to transfer property from one legal system to another. So as long as the national conception of what is property complies with the international conception of what is property, you know that you can transpose that French conception of property to the German conception of property, as long as both share the common principles of international property. And this would even enhance the possibility to transfer property or the resources from one state to another, and would be in line with fostering competition, as long as it is compatible with this international understanding of property. And this makes it possible then to introduce other elements into the definition of property. And they have been very much discussed already. Here the idea of commonality, of sharing, they can become part of what internationally has to be understood as property from a private law perspective. But here it is possible to propose a framework on the international level that national states would have to endorse. If they endorse it, this implies that the resources can circulate from one state to another. They would be part of the new economy of space, and this would foster innovation and help here in achieving the social function of property. All this, just in order to conclude with the idea that property might well be possible for celestial resources in outer space and constitute in this theft that is carried out for the benefit and in the interests of all mankind. So I thank you very much for your attention, and I will be happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.